Hi, welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Well, today we're going to be talking about the place of God in schools. Now, what we want our kids to learn at school is an expression of what we think they need to learn in order to become fully rounded adults. So determining what they're exposed to in the classroom is a revealing and often really political account of what we think matters in life. And this perhaps explains why debates over education seem so fraught today and nowhere more evident than when it comes to the place of God in schools. We've currently got a review of the national curriculum underway, and one of the reviewers has said that we need more religion taught in public schools. There's also a High Court challenge up in Queensland that contests federal funding of the National School Chaplaincy Program. You might remember that in New South Wales a couple of years ago, a really public debate over scripture versus ethics. And in Melbourne later this month, the IQ Squared debate will be debating the motion that faith-based religious education has no place in public schools.
We're looking forward to your contribution, Justine, to that debate in Melbourne.
I'm glad someone's looking forward to it, because it's certainly not me. With the end result being that a lot of people today say that religion should be left at home altogether. So, you know, we want to talk about this today. Is there any place for God at school? And we're really delighted to have on the program Zosha Erickson, who's the Executive Officer of Chaplaincy at Generate Ministries, and Greg Clark, CEO of the Bible Society. Zosha and Greg, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having us.
Great to be here.
Zosha, let's start with you. Whenever God, religion and public schools get mentioned in the same breath, people get really uptight and, you know, a little bit anxious about it. And people are often really concerned that, you know, taxpayer money is used to try and convert people. So there's this real fear of indoctrination. Can you understand why people have that kind of immediate reaction to whatever chaplaincy is, for example?
Absolutely. Well, I think the first thing to say is that through the school chaplains that we have in schools, in public schools in New South Wales, over 150 schools have had that exact conversation with us over the last 7 years. And so we've become quite well versed in the questions that people ask, and also the concerns that they have, from PNC meetings to discussions with staff and principals to a wider community forum that often happens when a school's considering having a religious or faith-based chaplain in their school. They ask the questions, well, what is this person going to do? What are they going to bring? And what we often find is it's not until they find out what it is that a chaplain does that they do have very valid concerns and questions. And I think today, as we discuss, those things will come out. But probably for us, the one thing that we have found is that when we take it out of the ideological, out of this kind of big scary realm of indoctrination and proselytising, and we talk about, well, what is it that a school needs, and how can a faith-based person support the spiritual development of children? How can they help them answer questions of identity? Then people start to realise that having a chaplain in a school can be a huge asset to their community.
So how about we start by talking about what chaplains actually do? Because, I mean, the perception out there seems to be that they're on a covert mission to, you know, to convert people, basically.
Yeah. Well, from a federal government perspective, the reason why they saw a need for chaplaincy in public schools across Australia, and this was in 2007, the Howard government introduced this program, they saw that there was a need for a spiritual element to the education that was being provided in public schools. And particularly out of some crises that had happened where it was even Howard who turned around and said, well, every other state organisation, you know, the fireys, the police, in hospitals, we have chaplains. Where are the chaplains in our schools? Because he recognised that there was a need for the answers and the discussion to happen around the big questions of life that the intellectual conversation doesn't always answer. So a chaplain is in a school as that person, not necessarily from a Christian faith. It can be from any faith, and there are other groups who have chaplains across public schools in Australia. But they're the person who can come in and provide the space to have that conversation about spirituality. But also the other side is the very practical help that a chaplain gives. So if you can imagine a chaplain in a hospital, it's often in a crisis time in a family where perhaps there's been a death or news of an illness. And in the same way in a school, often you see families journey through some of the biggest challenges of life, and a chaplain can be there to support them.
We often hear the comment that people who don't have a faith themselves are understandably nervous about having their children in a public school, especially, being exposed to this sort of content that's different, perhaps, from their family. How would you respond to that sort of criticism? Greg, perhaps you want to have a go at this.
Yeah, I can jump in there and appreciate everything that Sasha's just said about how the chaplains work. I mean, the school environment, I think, is the kind of place where you want every issue to be explored. You want children to be exposed to a whole range of experiences, ideas that help them to participate in the contemporary world. Religion's part of that and needs to be part of that. And even I think today there's an argument needs to be even more so part of that than in the past because we live in quite a pluralistic environment. So I'm a little surprised about the heat in this at one level because, you know, the kind of people who are often antagonistic to the teaching of education, of religion in the school context, are the same people who are very open to exposing their children to the widest range of ideas possible. Religion's just part of that. I think we've got to get past this fear of religion. And to be honest, I still think it's a post-September 11 effect that we have in our society where suddenly religion has become something scary and that gets built on in politics and all of a sudden we're aversive to religion in the educational context.
It's not like you'd expect kids to sort of unthinkingly accept everything they're being exposed to in these places. You need to give them a bit of credit for critical thinking, at least to some degree, and the influence of the family as well.
And it always surprises me how little credit is given to children. Those who work in schools, who have children, you know just how quickly they develop critical senses and how you can't pull the wool over their eyes. And so as long as discussion of religion is nothing about coercion and all about contribution and understanding, I'm really all for it.
A lot of people feel uncomfortable that chaplains, I guess, seem to be overwhelmingly Christian, although you can have different faiths represented as well in the chaplaincy program. So how do either of you respond to that sort of concern that people have that it's mostly one religion being represented?
Firstly, I'd say that for any school who chooses to have a chaplain, it's something that the whole school community makes a decision about. So a school will need to consult their parent body, their staff, the wider community. Often they'll even survey the students within the school, asking what it is that they're wanting. And for some schools, when they've asked that question and said, we have the option of having a chaplain, and yes, they will be faith-based, and yes, they will be a Christian person, a school said, well, you know what, that doesn't really work with who we are and the cultural backgrounds that we have represented. But surprisingly, and even in some of the most multicultural areas, particularly in Sydney, we've had a school community say, you know what, this is a person who can help us. This is a person who can talk about spiritual things and matters of faith. And we're all for that. Even if it is people from different cultural backgrounds or different faith perspectives, a chaplain has the mandate that they need to be there for people of all faiths. And whether that's people who might not identify with any particular faith, a chaplain is there as someone who can talk about spirituality and the journey of life with people. And a chaplain is a complementary member of staff to a school counsellor. Now, every public school in Australia does have some kind of a counsellor. In New South Wales, they're called school counsellors. In other states, they sometimes have different titles. That person tends to do a lot of the, perhaps the one-on-one. Often they're doing diagnostic testing on top of supporting families through difficult situations. So a chaplain really is providing that pastoral care level of support and also that wider school strengthening and equipping and resourcing.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We're talking with Zosia Erickson and Greg Clark, and we're on the topic of God, religion and school. In response to the comments of one of the reviewers of the national curriculum representing parents' associations, the comment was made that religious education belongs in the home. What do you think of that sort of private-public distinction?
I really don't understand it, to be honest. It's like saying, our home supports the Sydney Swans, and so we'll only talk about that at home. It's cutting something out of the educational experience is just crazy. And I think it's this fear that's behind behind the response that people have. Sometimes understandable fear. I mean, they've seen various kinds of fundamentalist religion do aggressive and hurtful things to children, and they don't want to see that ever happen again, and certainly not in their family, and I don't want to see that happen at all. But if you believe in education outside of the home at all, you want it to be rounded, holistic and real. And to do that, it just has to involve dimensions of difficult questions surrounding the nature of the world and whether there's a God, and ethical questions. And all of this should be part of the school experience. I think we've got to work out a way in a pluralistic society to do it really well and to model to children excellent discussion and even excellent disagreement about religious issues, so they come out of school able to do that well as citizens, and we may end up with a more peaceful and engaged community as a result.
Is there a limit, Joshua, to what chaplains can do? Like, what are the parameters for what they can and can't do?
Yeah, sure. Great question, Simon. The context that a school chaplain functions in is one of the support and pastoral care and engagement about I guess the individual's questions. A chaplain's not there in the same way as a scripture teacher would be. So in a lot of states around Australia, we have SRE, and that is a program that comes in usually supported by local groups, whether it's churches or other groups from other faiths that come in and for usually about half an hour a week can provide religious instruction classes. So there's already that space which has very much particularly in New South Wales a place and has been welcomed and historically has been happening since our state began. So a chaplain comes in with a very different brief, and that is to I guess begin to open a wider discussion across the wider school, even with staff about, you know, well, how is it that we're going to respond to these issues? We had a chaplain who, within her first week, was faced with the challenge of a staff member quite suddenly dying of cancer. And so her role within that was to help the children to understand what did that mean. She explained cancer as you know, like a poison that goes through someone's body. They did Daffodil Day at school the week after. The children raised money to support cancer. She then went round when the staff member died to every classroom and spoke with the children and talked about grief, talked about hope, talked about how to work through their feelings. And the principal, who even after a term of having this chaplain in her school, said, "I don't know what I would have done without this person."
Is it the case that students particularly quite like chaplains because they're not disciplinary figures, I guess, in the same way that the headmaster might be?
Mm. We had another chaplain who was described by his principal as the Pied Piper of his school. He'd be out there and in the playground, the children would flock to him because, as you said, Justine, he wasn't seen in the same way as a lot of the other teaching staff were. Often the chaplains might be called by their first name because the children identify and the school staff actually want for them to be different. So, yes, they do often perform that role of a mentor or a coach, someone who is a lot more accessible to the students. They're often out there in the playground after school running activities and being someone who children can come to and share their questions and their struggles with.
Greg, this is a slightly different, although it's all related, the question of literacy, and schools are very interested in all sorts of literacy, media and digital and so on. But you're also a big one for pushing the idea of biblical literacy because you reckon you can't be fully educated without that.
Yeah, and I'm not alone in that. I mean, I think there's a general recognition now around the world by professors, poets, anyone involved in humanities, really, that if you don't know the Bible, you are not going to get the Western tradition. I think religious literacy in general is very important, and understanding the nature of the big faiths is a part of being a proper citizen these days. But Bible literacy is important to the curriculum in a different way, because the shaping of the West has so much been around the Christian faith that if you don't know the shape of the Bible, you're going to get a distorted view of what Western culture is all about. There's got to be a way to teach the Bible where everyone realises you are genuinely getting educated here about why this text had such an impact on our literature, our laws, the shaping of our society, and so forth.
Well, I think this is a big discussion, and in some ways we've only scratched the surface of it. But that's all we have time for on this program. But if you want to hear more about Greg's contribution to how the Bible has shaped our Western history and tradition, you can check out The Great Bible Swindle, your new book. And also, Zosha Erickson will also be speaking at the Rethinking a Public Faith Conference in March. So you can register for that at www.rethinking.net.au. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.